Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thanks very much for downloading us. We have a great and a wonderful guest today. The reason he is wonderful is not only has he done a lot for the country, and not only has he done a lot for a lot of other people, but we had a glitch in recording last week. This is the 1027B, so we've been doing this over 20 years. This is only the second time I've ever had to re-record a show or even a segment. So that shows you how great engineering Radio MD has had with its luck. And Caitlin is our engineer, who's superb. So I am sure it was something I did wrong. But in any case, this is a embrace the suck, which is kind of exactly what we had, because we had a magnificent interview with Brent Gleason, who is the author of Embrace the Suck, The Navy SEAL Way to an Extraordinary Life. It's published by Hatchet, which published a couple of my prior books as well. So I have to say it is wonderful, a wonderful publishing company. And part of embracing the suck in publishing is, in fact, that publishing companies are great at publishing, but the author has to do most of the work and publicity him or herself, and Brent has done that so well. So I should tell you before we start that the sponsor of You, the Owner Manual Podcast, is Persona Nutrition. You can use Persona for your personalized supplements. I do. You can too. And if you want to have some fun, take the free online assessment to get supplements personalized just for you. Maybe you don't need any. Maybe there's something you're missing in what your vitamins and minerals provide and your diet provides. You get to talk to a nutritionist for free. Not many things you get with skilled personnel offer it to you for free, but you can go to mypersona.com, mypersona.com. Brent, I have to thank you very much for coming back. Brent's website, by the way, and you can find out a lot of material there, is Taking Point Leadership, takingpointleadership.com. And Brent is the founder of that program as well. So, Brent, I hate to actually try and recreate what was such a great session. But one of the things that I asked you about was how you got the name Embrace the Suck, and with that, how you got to actually to be a Navy SEAL. So let's go first to how you got to be a Navy SEAL, because that's such an interesting story.
So first off, happy to be here and talking to you again. So it's a double the pleasure. And thanks so much again for having me on the show. A very timely effort, since today is the actual official book release date of the new book, Embrace the Suck. So to answer your second question first, the backstory is kind of interesting, because it's a bit different than, you know, many of my colleagues who made that journey into SEAL training and into the SEAL teams. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, did my undergraduate education at Southern Methodist University, and graduated with degrees in finance and economics. So naturally, I took a job as a financial analyst with a global firm based out of downtown Dallas. Now, during that time, I had a very close college friend of mine who was a year behind me in school. So he was now a senior. I was out in quote unquote corporate America. And he was one of these young men that did, in fact, have a lifelong vision, dream, and passion to graduate, join the Navy, and attempt to be accepted into the notorious Navy SEAL training pipeline, which is arguably the most challenging special operations training and selection program known to man. And while I thought that was highly admirable, I also deemed it to be somewhat of an unrealistic career path for a young man. So I wished him well. But soon thereafter, we began training together. And for me, it was just a way to stay fit. And so by nature, we started spending a lot of time together, and which piqued my interest. So I started reading books and doing research about the history of the Naval Special Warfare community, our forefathers from the underwater demolition teams in World War II, to how we really cut our teeth as a premier assault force in Vietnam and the years beyond that, and became fascinated with the history, the culture, the mindset of high performance and resilience and grit and mental fortitude, and the total focus on mission. And it really got me and my brain percolating as far as what that could potentially mean. And at the time, keep in mind, I held SEALs on this ridiculously high pedestal of like fire-breathing, glass-eating behemoths who bench press 500 pounds and, you know, could put a man 6 feet under with a steely-eyed glare. That was actually what I envisioned. I later found out, of course, that was all true. But I just... But long story short, I ended up joining him on his journey, and I had this strange epiphany.
Now he made it into the SEALs too?
Well, that's an interesting twist to the story. So I left my job. He and I finished our training up in Colorado to train at high altitude. We both joined together and actually got into the same SEAL training class together, which was by the grace of God, because you get shuffled all around once you join the Navy. And interestingly, sadly, and ironic, he didn't make it. And the saddest part is I it was my fault. I don't think we talked about this last time. Maybe we did, but we run six classes a year. So in that 2 month gap, everybody for your SEAL training class is kind of filtering in from, you know, different branches of the military or the Navy or the civilian world. And he and I we got there about 5 weeks before we would class up and begin training. And he and I were roommates in the dorms. And the week before we started all the horrific training, I was violently ill with a flu and high fever. And long story short, I got better the weekend before we started the hard training.
And I gave it to him.
So thanks for bringing that up. There's a silver lining. He always had a passion for being a pilot too. So what he actually did was he was medically dropped. They didn't give him a second chance for whatever reason. And so he did a lateral transfer to the Army, became an officer, a helo pilot, and done 12 combat deployments across Iraq and Afghanistan as a medevac helo pilot. So saved hundreds of lives, seen a lot of combat. He's now a captain in the Air Force. So he's had a pretty illustrious career.
And your career was no slouch as well. And when did the phrase... and I guess it would be in the title of the book, and because there are a lot of mottos, I guess, as I've come to appreciate the book, which
we have many.
Which is a great book, by the way. And so since this is the official day of release, go to Amazon and help make this a number one book, because it is a great book. Embrace the Suck. So how did that phrase get started in, is it a Navy phrase? Is it a SEALs phrase? Is it a special ops phrase? Is it, who owns that phrase?
I think originally this phrase was, I'd have to look back at my research, was born in the Marine Corps, I believe, which is great because I'm the son of a Marine, and but yet went to the Navy. And then it's obvious, it's widely been adopted across all branches of the military, and definitely in the hardest ranks of our special operations training pipelines. And essentially the term is exactly what it sounds like. It's about leaning into pain, leaning into suffering, leaning into adversity, as opposed to shying away from it, and taking ownership over what you can, finding the opportunity amidst the chaos, and continuing to push forward. As one of the quotes I really love, it's so simple in the book that I use, is from Winston Churchill. He says, when you're in hell, just keep going. It kind of captures the essence of that term really well.
Now, there's some other phrases that come up in the book as well. I've got to say that one of the things you try and do in the book is, and I look at the book as really helping people lead. And as I told you, I was a chair of departments at the University of Chicago for 17 years, and then for 13 here at the Cleveland Clinic, or institute chair here. And when you're part of the job, I was taught by the first person I got to work for, a guy named Bill Hamilton, who ran the Department of Anesthesia, Critical Care, and Pain Management at the University of California, San Francisco. And when I was working for him, he told me that, and when I first became a team leader for cardiovascular anesthesia, he said, your job is to get everyone in the right position to so that they can do the best job they can and to enable them to do that job. And in fact, at the University of Chicago, our the president, Hannah Gray, every year, three times a year, would give a talk. And it was the same talk. It was three times a year for 17 years. I heard the same exact pep talk at the chair's dinner. There were about 50 chairs, mm-hmm. and she would have each of us, you know, between history and biology and et cetera. And all of us would get together, the law school, the medical school, et cetera. All the chairs would get together three times a year. And she would start, and I literally by the end of the 17 years could give the talk, but it was, and I never understood exactly why until afterward. I mean, after about 5 years, it got on me that she said the job of the department chair is to enable the functioning of the faculty, and it really was so that our job was to try and find the right position for each player, and I got to use it with Michael Jordan, and I told my faculty, you know, this is not the right position for you. You know, Michael Jordan is not a center, and they found the right position for him. He was a shooting guard, two guard, and I need you to move over here, so you're the two guard. Very effective, except then one day he played center for the Bulls and was outstanding at that when Luke Longley or someone was injured. But in any case, the point is that I'm saying is there's a different philosophy when you say do something that sucks every day. So that's kind of different, and you made a great point of that last week.
Yeah, essentially, in large part, the book is about being intentional in how we reframe the narrative in our minds about what true adversity is, and not just about, you know, the inevitable suffering and pain what we all experience in various capacities throughout our life, but also when it comes to, you know, building a family, building a business, achieving both personal and professional goals. And the philosophy behind doing something that sucks every day, I borrowed that, of course, from my friend and former teammate, David Goggins, who wrote the foreword. And basically, it's about identifying the aspects of goal achievement that are going to make you uncomfortable, whether that's pursuing your career in healthcare or in finance or in any walk of life or achieving a fitness goal like running an ultramarathon or whatever that might be. Any, as you know, with your illustrious career, anything worth pursuing in life, whether it be in work, family, philanthropy, whatever it might be, is going to have associated with it some stress, some anxiety, maybe even some pain and suffering, as we all know. But doing something that sucks every day, the philosophy around that I focus on in the book is about identifying those things that make you uncomfortable, but that are imperative for achieving that goal or pursuing that strategic imperative or that endeavor. Make a list of those things that make you uncomfortable and then practice those things with intention day in and day out. And then those things become easier and your comfort zone expands. And then you have a better mindset and philosophy around how you can continue to move forward, how you can continue to pound away at the boundaries of your comfort zone. Then, quite frankly, we exceed more of the goals we set in life, and whether those, again, be personal, professional, family, philanthropy, whatever those might be. So it's not just about doing the wrong things that suck or pushing ourselves, you know, down the wrong path of adversity for no apparent reason, but being very, very intentional and strategic in what we select and how we choose to suffer with purpose.
And really what I took from what you said is it is accepting the challenge, and I don't know if this is the right quite phrasing, but it's not only accepting the challenge, but embracing the challenge as a worthwhile goal.
Am I getting it correct? As you recall, I write in the early chapters about reassessing your core values and finding ways to place constraints on yourself to limit your ability to be lured down the wrong path of temptation or the shiny objects or the quote unquote opportunities that have nothing really to do with what you want to achieve in your personal and professional life. And so when we're more intentional about defining those values, making decisions based on those core values, then we can put ourselves in a position of greater success and, quite frankly, less anxiety and confusion, because we limit our constraints. We say, no, this is the path that I'm going. These are the lane markers within which I'm going to innovate. But beyond that, this is the path I'm headed. And of course, changing that path and course correction is imperative sometimes when we identify new ways we need to go in life. But when we can avoid temptation, limit constraints, and find ways to be more disciplined and accountable, then even research shows that you will be more fulfilled and you will be happier. And therefore, you'll be more confident. And therefore, you're going to continue to achieve more of the goals you set.
And I love one of the phrases you have, and I guess this is get comfortable being uncomfortable so you can stay focused at the task on hand. Do you want to elaborate at all on that? It's such a great, to me, it's such a great understanding for what I am doing. Every time I start a new career path, and I'm doing that, if you will, in starting a longevity curation company, that when you start a new career path, you have to get uncomfortable at being uncomfortable.
Totally. And as you've seen, we have many catchphrases in the SEAL community and Naval Social Warfare community, but some of the oldest ones that are from our forefathers are, the only easy day was yesterday, and get comfortable being uncomfortable. Essentially, and that's my favorite one, because it really encapsulates the embrace the suck mentality. And the core components around resilience and mental fortitude and a growth mindset as opposed to a fixed mindset. And, a growth mindset really is a person who not just accepts, but almost craves getting uncomfortable. They crave pushing the boundaries of their comfort zone. They're a lifelong learner. They're in a constant state of improvement. They're never satisfied with the status quo. That's people, like you, obviously, who have achieved so much in your career, and other people that I write about in the book. It's not just about me. It's about other far more achieved individuals that I'm inspired by, is the fact that they get comfortable being uncomfortable, but that's a continuum. It's not a one-time thing. It's an ongoing lifestyle. One thing I want to put out there is, we're about to, hit New Year's, and we're going to go into 2021, and I'm already seeing stuff on social media, the news, and people saying, thank God 2020 is over. It's like, well, 2021 is going to be very similar. It's not just like New Year's is going to happen, the ball drops and everything, and we transport back in time. This year is going to be wrapped in permanency. And a lot of that's not necessarily bad. There's a lot of innovation and creativity and forward thinking that adversity forces upon us. And so, we need to put away the thought of, well, when this is over or when things go back to normal, those phrases have no relevance to reality. Realistic and having the ability to think creatively about the landscape of the new battlefield before us will force innovation and force people to reassess values, reassess what really matters to them, restructure their life, restructure their business. And again, a lot of really good is going to come from this. And that's not to discount, the loss of life, the loss of business, and all the other obstacles. But, there is opportunity amidst chaos, even in this situation.
Let me go in and say that I just love, if I haven't said it before, I love this book, and I love what you're, I guess it would be called, the website that you have. if you will, Taking Point, T-A-K-I-N-G, Point, P-O-I-N-T, leadership.com. I want to get to one more phrase that you answered a question about out of the surprise to me last week. And that was, I guess it's another catchphrase of SEALs, but it is don't run to your death. What does that mean? I mean, it's such a great phrase. It used to be don't run to pleasure, enjoy it. But don't run to your death is very different than that.
It's similar. The philosophy of that comes from, quite frankly, lessons we've learned from the battlefield and in 20 years of war, whereas, you know, our tactics and strategies have shifted over time. You know, there's that old war philosophy that the more you fight the same enemy, the more that you have to continue to adjust your tactics because they will adjust theirs. And we adapt to one another. Therefore, adaptation is a constant continuum. And the don't run to your death is really about, let's say, for example, in the context of a special operations mission, you know, go slow, communicate, you know, shoot, move, but use aggression only when necessary. Kind of the old tactics were that we rush a target as fast as possible, you know, overwhelm the enemy with firepower and speed and violence of action. Whereas we learned that oftentimes in certain situations, it's better to slow it down, communicate really well, walk through the target, take it slow, assess risks, and only use aggression when necessary. And it's a wonderful philosophy in its simplicity, because it goes back to a couple of our philosophies of, you know, when it comes to achieving a goal or anything else, you know, eat the elephant one bite at a time. And the other philosophy in training we use is slow is smooth and smooth is fast, meaning walk, you know, crawl, walk, run, basically is that philosophy. So they're all kind of wrapped in the same mindset of sometimes to gain expertise in an area of life or overcome an obstacle or adversity or mend a relationship or a business or really anything that requires a little bit of struggle and overcoming adversity. We can't always tackle everything at once, nor should we. If you have 5 or 7 priorities, you have no priorities. It's really about prioritization and execution. So the don't run to your death is about taking time or a tactical pause, as we might call it, taking stock of your current situation, assessing resources, assessing risks, and developing a solid plan before you just charge the hill, so to speak, with limited resources and chaos and confusion and no real plan.
To sum up, let me just put a plug in. This is a wonderful book, and the lessons learned in SEAL training are really lessons that we can use for life and that you have learned for life in takingpointleadership.com and in this book. It is, I try and read at least half of the book before I interview the guest and each week. And this one was such that I don't think you can put it down. If you are involved in anything involving leadership. So I want to thank you, Brent, and it is Brent Gleason, G-L-E-E-S-O-N, the book is called Embrace the Suck, The Navy SEAL Way to an Extraordinary Life, Embrace the Suck. If you need a gift for anyone for any reason, birthday, anything, it isn't just for people in leadership position. It's how for them to help themselves, I would guess, lead themselves through life. And it is a wonderful, if you will, book. The 7... I guess there are 7 Navy SEAL sayings that keep your team motivated. Get comfortable being uncomfortable. And if you will, don't run to your death. Do a lot of communicating and planning are 2 that at least I'm going to even embrace more. I must admit, the other one I love, but is always is embraced to me by Mike Tyson's phrase, but no plan survives first contact with the enemy. I suppose that's always been true. And I guess Mike Tyson said it, what is, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth or something like that.
exactly.
So,
yep. Plans are great, but
and I guess that's really it. Plans are great, but preparation is better. And so the book is Embrace the Suck. If I could say, this should be the best book of the new year, and is a great book to get. I'm going to start giving it as gifts. And so it is thrilled me. And Brent, I got to thank you again. This is 1027B. The B's are always the guest segment. This is 1027B of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. We're brought to you by Persona Nutrition. Persona has supplements, vitamins, minerals personalized to your need. You can get a daily vitamin pack personalized just for you if you go to mypersona.com. Can you imagine? You can get personalized vitamins for you. I take my personalized supplements. You can too. For example, you may be right to take NAD, or it may not be right for you, or you may need extra magnesium, or maybe you get all you need from your food. All you have to do is take the free online assessment and get your recommendations, just like I did, at mypersona.com. That's mypersona.com. I want to thank Caitlin for wonderful engineering, and I want to especially thank Brett Gleason for the reappearance as just a super guest. Thanks again, and thank you for downloading us. We'll be back next week with a 1028A, the news of the week, and what it means to you, especially in what it means to you. It's non-COVID. We try and keep it non-COVID all the time, as well as a guest 1028B, and we will have a special guest for you. I actually don't know who's coming up later today or later next week on 1028B, but it will be special because our producer, Donna Gould, is so outstanding. Thanks again, and thank you, Caitlin, and especially all of you who downloaded us. Thanks.